didn't give
it? Oh, yeah.
Karen Armstrong?
Here.
Guy Falcon?
Here.
Kathleen Grinberg Funes? Frank Hay?
Here.
Leonard King?
Here.
Stan Karofsky?
Here.
Richard Levine? George Palmer?
Here.
Steve Trombley?
Here.
Nathan Bull.
We do have a quorum. We will continue. At this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Strong to come forward, please. It said you used to have to serve detention quite often when you were in school. That's not why I'm asking you up here tonight. I would like to congratulate you on retirement. Hope that it is a very successful retirement, that you are pleased, and I'd like to offer you this on behalf of the board.
Oh, thank you very, very much.
Keep the memory, but to say thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Don.
Thank you. And especially thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You may want to box.
I'll move to approval of the agenda. Resolved, the superintendent of the schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve the agenda.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Leonard. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion approved. I'll open the floor for public comment. If anybody would like to address the board at this time. Okay, thank you. And then we will move to our presentation, which is our open discussion on that feared thing that we have been avoiding, budget. And I'll let Mr. Amel start it off.
Thank you. You have binders in front of you at the table. Materials are organized according to the table of contents that you see there. So if you're like me, you might tear that page out and just have a reference point, or otherwise certainly you'll navigate. There's not many pages here, but I do want to begin by saying that the administrators and supervisors have worked on the process of this draft for the proposal for the budget for this next coming school year, and have done so with, I believe, full knowledge of the concerns that we hear out of Albany relative to loss of state aid. That will be reflected in the budget proposal as I move you through the pages. It's a budget document in progress. It's in progress for a number of reasons. One, as we gain more certainty from Albany relative to the picture for state aid for school districts, we'll be in a better position to make adjustments accordingly. We are assuming the worst case set of numbers that we were left with the last time we have talked, and I'll explain that to you a little bit more, and that's built into our budget projections. It's a work in progress because your input, your perspectives on the various pieces that make up a school district budget, of course, are yet to be heard and welcomed, and that's why I want to treat this kind of an open dialogue as opposed to any formal presentation via PowerPoints or anything at this point. It's a work in progress because there are still pieces of data for which we don't have. Example, we're not clear, certainly at this time of the year, on what the BOCES projections will be and their rate charges for various services at BOCES. So we're estimating in this budget what those what that cost might be. The estimation would involve, a little bit of an increase, but it's just what it is. It's an estimate. So that's a variable to keep in mind as we work through the pages. It's a work in progress because there are some options that are built in here that, especially in the area of special education, that if we find as a group, if you find them to be attractive to pursue, could effectively lower our costs in the special education area, even though, as you'll see in a few minutes, there would be a request to add a couple of positions to make that savings possible. So I'll explain that to you in a few minutes. And it's obviously a work in progress from the point of view when all of the ideas are collected from this first round. We go back and try to get the most recent information we can get our hands on, take your thoughts and input into the design and rework it and keep coming back and talking about what it means for the taxpayers in Beekman Town. So what you have in front of you, you can see clearly the table of contents. I'll go through this more as an overview and stop in each section to attempt to answer questions. I think that might work well. But certainly anytime during the comments that I'm making that you wish to ask questions, I have certainly the administrators are present, supervisors are present, Ron is present. He has the budget document on the computer, and if there's a what-if kinds of scenario dialogue that comes out of what we say tonight, I think you'd be very comfortable being able to slap in the conditions that you were talking about and give you some more information on the spot. Okay? So very quickly, in section one is the cover letter, if you will, that I sent to all the administrators and supervisors. I don't have to read it for you. You certainly can do that. But basically, it was reaffirming that we want to have as close to the best budget that we can possibly develop for the reasons I've already stated. But also in this packet, a little bit different than perhaps in previous years, each of the administrators and supervisors who have cost centers, meaning they're responsible for particular functions of the budget, were apprised of what those line items were, what the amounts were from last year, and then make their suggestions on what needed to be increased or decreased. All of the forms in that first section are simply the forms we use to get input. Gary and Technology, Contracted Services, Transportation, Buildings and Grounds, General Education, etc. So that's just a quick procedural kind of section, but I wanted to show you how we did that. Beginning, I guess, with the meat and potatoes of what's in the budget proposals, you have a section on projected enrollment, student enrollment for the school year. And you can clearly see by the chart, we've identified pre-K through 12 and separated out the schools for you to have the categories to see what the enrollment projections are going to be. I can tell you, if you are wondering from a general point of view, what is our enrollment difference this year from last year, we would be seeing across the pre-K through 12 continuum a loss of 26 students. So we're not climbing, we're not down. I should point out, and again, please jump in at any time. I really don't want it to be such a monotone with it at all.
Okay, yep. So 26 students down, you're saying that's the
loss from
06-07 to
no 07-08. We're down 26 students. Correct.
And that includes having more kids in the pre-K.
All the counts
that included pre-K.
Yes, it did. Okay. Yes, it did. I will quickly mention, and that's a great opening, George. I will mention that we've attempted. I'd hope to have the data tonight, but wasn't able to get it from the White Pines Commons development. We had contacted them to give us a better inkling of the kind of a mini census is what we tried to create, and we had assurances that they could do that for us. So we were kind of waiting with hope that they could tell us the number of families in that development area and the ages of the students so that we could cross-check how many of the students are already enrolled in our district versus could be enrolling next year. We don't have that number. So what we do with kindergarten, of course, is just make an estimate based on our current understandings of our populations. So this is an example of right now our projected loss of students is 26, but with
this
an
for the, next year
for next year for an increase or decrease, it could go up or down a few students.
Are we going to have an actual census taken to see how many?
That's a great question. It involves. Can it be done? Yes, it can. It hasn't been done in about 10 years. It was the last set of data that I could find. It's really a procedural question from the board's point of view. Would you like one formally? I was targeting the smaller group just because that was the most unknown population, meaning kindergarten perhaps and above. But if you want to do a census, we dug up some records on how it was handled in 10 years ago. It did, at that time, it involved commissioning several individuals to take sections of the our school district and be responsible for doing door-to-door census. That hasn't been done yet. As I said, I was just doing a mini one for this kindergarten class, I should say, but certainly can be done. I'm willing to proceed as you would like in that regard.
On White Pines, another family moved in. There'll be three more moving in the next month. So we're only going to have like three places left over.
Yeah.
But he can't get that information.
Right. He was working on it. It didn't come in time for the board meeting. So maybe we can go back to that question at the end as what you want to do with the census part of it.
Is there other board members that would be leaning that way with the census?
I'd have to know how much it's going to cost to do the census.
If it's not done correctly, it's a waste of time anyway. It
could give you some bad information.
It could give you some bad information if it's not done correctly.
Yeah.
What has it done in the past? Does anybody know when they did it in the past?
They went door to door.
It was just kind of hourly rate, wasn't it?
You remember
what
they paid
for the census? Was done, did it send wrong figures to
they were by district.
Yeah.
But there was a flat fee.
By the district.
Okay. I was just asking.
I don't think it was done very accurately when it was done the last time, if I recall correctly. It wasn't done 100%. That's kind of what throws you off. If you miss houses, don't go back.
I remember them stopping in and asking.
I think the problem is when they go to residence, they may not be home. And if you leave the card for them, they may not complete it and send it in. So it's not always the process's fault.
Yeah, there
are. We're going to have a national census done in 2010. Do we get any useful information from that, or is that totally separate?
Oh, it sounds separate. I don't really know at the moment. National census, well.
That doesn't usually help the school.
Go states, counties perhaps, but not particular districts, and wouldn't concern itself with that part of it. Keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. So again, you got the projected enrollment sheets. The next section, and again, that's pliable based on what the closer we get to school, the more we'll know about families moving in, families moving out. The next section is, to black and white copies, is our projected FTEs, or district staffing, if you will. And I can tell you through the collection of all these pages, it would look identical to last year, or this current year. We have not added any new staff members in any of the buildings for any of the assignments. Everything is present year's document. That there are two anticipated vacancies that will occur, and the staffing would be watched carefully to see if, in fact, as we budgeted to fill them, that we still need to fill them. But at the present time, it reflects filling those two vacancies, and they are both teaching positions, classroom teaching positions. So beyond that, these are identical, as you can see. Well, you can't, but 08, 09, numbers are identical to everything you see on these pages. Okay.
Do you know how many of those are grant funded, and are we likely to lose grants in the economic?
There, we had a code for the grant funds. Let's just dig one up for you.
It's right in the front of your staffing.
Right in the front? That's where it is. Whoops. Okay, the back of the front, there you go. The back of the front page is coded. by the individual assignment as to whether it's a grant fund or not.
As far as that's total, the grants are still coming
with
through.
UPK.
Yes. Actually, you have certainly read. I'm sure board members have read the information coming recently out of Congress relative to Title I, and that there is a plan to submit a significant, or put it as part of the stimulus package, if you will, at the federal level, to increase the Title I funding to states, or the opportunities for states to apply to Title I by almost double the amount that's invested in Title I now. How that will play out in New York remains to be seen, but it's a variable to know that any positions that currently are funded through Title I, if there's an intention to increase the value of the Title I money, it would be a pretty strong indication that those funds for current assignments would still be there. That's the only connection I'm trying to make with that. If it's for the board to know, we have a total of 21 individuals who in one form or another are affected by grant funding. Keep moving. All right. Entertain questions? Okay. Thank you. Section 4. Whoops. Where's my page? I got reverse order. Section 4 is really the blast, if you will, of what does it all mean as we're staring at it today. And it has two or three support documents with you as reference points. I'll start with the spreadsheet, and Ron certainly is available to entertain with you and me responses to questions that you might have as you look at it. The proverbial quote, well, first of all, please make a note in your margin, and I'm sure you remember it, that this budget sheet, as you're looking at it right now, presumes the use of $1.5 million of fund balance. That's the carryover from last year. For the past 2 years, the board has authorized using the fund balance to the amount of $1.5 million. You are looking at a spreadsheet with everything that's in this budget with $1.5 million of fund balance applied. As you will see, and I'm sure you're going to spot different spots where there are questions that you would like to ask, I'll draw your attention right down to the very bottom line, which no pun intended, but the bottom line of the budget as we've developed it so far would represent a 2.8% budget-to-budget increase, a tax increase of $1.47 with a tax rate of 16.91 in 07, and therefore the tax rate based on this sitting budget would be 18.38. I reference that so that, and the other pages, so you'd have some ways to manage and discuss and talk about the impact of that. You'll see the bar graph page. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, my one question is, when you figured in the 1.5, what about the $200,000 capital project?
Did not build that in. Correct, Ron? That's correct.
It is inside.
It's in here?
It is included.
Okay.
The only difference with the $200,000 this year, the board made a commitment about 2 years ago. We had $1 million left over in a capital project fund. We could only use that to pay off debt for that capital project. So at that point, we decided, or you decided, to allocate $200,000 each year for the next 5 years. That money previously was reported as a $200,000 as revenue. We put that in there. But in our recent audit, they had advised us that it really isn't revenue, but it should be a reduction to expenditures. So the difference with the $200,000 this year is it's not in the revenue side, but it's a reduction to the principal expenditure for the capital project bond. But the $200,000 is included in the amount.
So it's 1.7 total.
Yep.
Well, 1.7, but the $200,000 fund balance. It's not a necessary right. fund balance. Yeah, right. It's committed money.
I just didn't see it.
Yeah.
And the graph you recall was part of the presentation last year to the public, and we simply upgraded it to show you this year's numbers. So under the tax rate of 2008-2009, you will remember, of course, that what the voters approved was a tax rate of 17.58. But when the assessments and other final numbers were crunched, the actual tax rate became 1692. And I reference that only because you'll see that same downward pattern for both of those areas in the past 4 years to give you a sense of what could might happen with the next budget proposal. That's why it's there. And the backup page to that, or the companion page to that, is simply a very quick sketch of the fund balance as it currently, as we see it or have it as of June 30th. So those are pieces to the puzzle, you know, that I thought by putting them together in this section, it would give you some good food for thought on what to and how to manage or direct or think about managing the budget that you see in front of you. Want to go back to, I will go back, but certainly interrupt at any time. I will go back to the cost centers and point out some changes that if you are watching, comparing last year's printout to this year's printout, you would see some changes. The first one I would mention is you do not see in this cost center approach a listing for BOCES services. That's not to say that we are not accounting for BOCES services. The BOCES services that apply to the various departments in the district have been relegated to their responsibility. That portion of the BOCES would be in their cost center, elementary school, middle school, etc. But since we don't have BOCES numbers yet, we can only estimate what the costs are. But those costs have been included in this, you know, our projected costs are included in this budget. You just won't see the line item saying this is the BOCES line for those costs. Another is that there would appear to be, if we're comparing apples to apples, it would appear that we have a differentiation on the building allocations, and that also is true from a line item, but not in terms of less allocations for the buildings. We simply reserve to the buildings their share out of that line item, so you decrease one if you spread out numbers in other locations. That's why there would be a differential in that category. And there are several, you'll see departments we created, what was already in place from a funding point of view, but the reference for curriculum and staff development, we want to have a longer term accounting, if you will, each year for the budget and the activities that come out of curriculum. So any staff development costs that may be involved, be they speakers or training sessions, etc., where they would have otherwise been paid for from the district, they would now have a cost center for the curriculum director to be able to say that's where my money is located to do the activities for curriculum development and staff development. And I'm seeing if there's anything else that immediately jumps out at me. Not really. You'll see increases and decreases. That's some of where the
question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On the decrease on this buildings and grounds, that's quite a substantial decrease there. Are we going to be able to hold it out? Something that concerns me there.
Buildings and grounds?
$95,000.
Okay. I've got to go to my spread. Those you're dashing.
Yeah, well, the buildings and grounds has a reduction because we previously had a maintenance projects account of $86,000. It was in this year's budget, and we didn't need that full $86,000. Don didn't. He did those projects, and he didn't foresee any other projects because some of the projects, and correct me if I'm wrong, Don, but some of the projects that he would have put in that account are actually inclusive in the Excel project. So that was able to absorb some of the expenditure, not have to put it in the general fund. And that's where you see some of that large reduction.
And therefore, no need to ask for it. That same number or higher number because we didn't use that portion of it this year.
Hey, quick question. Are you going to get into the BOCES question later?
We can really cover it anytime, I think.
Well, is it what I hear you saying? Is it like bringing kids back? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I've got a section on special education that talks about some of the bringbacks and transfers of students that are occurring and a couple of ideas of how we could save even some more money.
And the staff to do it.
Yeah. And that's coming up, actually. So part of the dialogue, it will be it tonight or as the weeks unfold with this body, is to understand. I would present it this way, that the quote unquote worst case scenario, if you will, is what you see in front of you. If we're able to make adjustments to this budget as I've presented it to you so far, the adjustments would be to the advantage of the district in terms of dollars saved and the advantage to the taxpayers in terms of a reduction of tax rate. Because we have estimated the upper ends of some of those areas that we don't have the data for yet, we're believing, quite frankly, that there's going to be different numbers that will affect the budget-to-budget increase, as well as tax rate, as well as tax levy. The other variable, and again, I put that chart in so you have that at your disposal, is whether or not the $1.5 million of fund balance is the certain number that you work with, or if there is to be a change in that number. If there's a change to the lesser, obviously it will change these numbers higher, and if there's a change to the greater, it's going to have some effect on these numbers dropping. The third piece is the also unknown, is the assessments, whether they go up, stay the same, or not. We estimate from one year to the next, but we, last year, that's why I put that, well, one of the other reasons why I put that other chart in there was that the drop last year from 1758 to 1692 was affected by the assessments when they came in. So it changed the tax rate because we collected, there was more collection for the district because assessments rose. So those are crystal ball, that one's a crystal ball kind of a thing. We have absolutely no way of knowing will the assessments change dramatically. So we're holding, I think that's how we approached it, Ron. We held the, well, we built a minimal increase into the in perception for assessments, but we didn't, we certainly have no clear picture on that.
These numbers here actually are no increase to the assessment.
Above what is.
My mm-hmm. gut feeling is that there'll be an increase even if they don't increase property values. You know, they don't go around and reassess properties. Because we've had some commercial properties that have been that have come in, and last year they were on the tax rolls as partial values. For instance, the theater and the Target store. My guess is that this year the full assessed value will be on the tax roll. So even if residential values don't receive increased assessment, the total value of the district's assessment should go up, which would lower the tax burden on the public. But then again, it's early to know that, but that's all indications show that we should see at least an increase in commercial assessed value.
Now, will you know before the budget is put to the voters?
We will know. At that point, the assessments will be a better guess for that. But we will not have the full assessed value until sometime over the summer.
Yeah, we've been pretty close to estimating the last 4 or 5 years.
This early, no. But in
the later stages.
Later stages, yes, because we get our direction from the real property office. And usually, Jim Gagneau there is usually right on task. With you. At that point, he's had some reports already initially from assessments from around the area. And so his numbers at that point, which is late April, are pretty accurate, conservative accurate. Which is why you've seen on that graph where the tax rate actually goes lower when the tax bill comes out, because the final assessments came in a little bit more than what we were conservatively estimated.
In the presentation last year, you might recall, a little bit of humor to it, that when we presented to the voters the $17.58 tax rate, you remember I had that floating red circle in there that said it's going to somewhere be in this range. It's probably not going to be that number. Well, that floating circle became the lower rate of 1692 because of the assessments. So it's the closest we can answer at this point, and we would probably be presenting the voters with, again, that conservative final look, with the hopes that if the trend holds true, it would even be lower when the tax bills are actually printed. So the overall increases or decreases from one year to the next amount to, as I said, approximately a 2.8% spending increase. That spending increase also is comprised of approximately 70% of salaries and benefits, which make up that biggest percentage of any increase. And I would point out that base salaries and benefits total averaged 4.32% as a if we took them all and averaged them all, what was the overall increase from one year to the next? That was a 4.32%, and this budget is presenting its needs being met with 2.8%, not lower than what the averages of the salary increases and benefit increases. We have good intel from the insurance company on what the rates will be. That hasn't changed in the last, I guess, last 2 or 3 weeks of memos. They're holding firm on it. We've built that number into this budget as well to protect that. You know that we have a at least one bargaining unit yet to be resolved for this current year and future years, and so the results of the bargaining outcome of the bargaining could have an effect also on the budget, as you see in front of you. But we've tried to take the approach of demonstrating the most logical upper ends of any of those questionable areas so that you could have a starting point to understand that by our manipulation with the next several weeks and your input, we'll have more time to get much closer to real clearly defined amounts for the distribution through the budget. But at the present time, again, I guess I'd close on that note, is that it's a 2.8% spending increase over last year.
This fund balance is the actual what we have right now? Is this what you're saying?
Undesignated.
Yes.
The chart is
the undesignated.
We have designated amounts which are earmarked for some of the reserves that we have established.
So even though we're given 1.5, we're still increasing.
Yeah, the chart has shown a trend.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of letting you see that chart. And then over the next, again, I assume there'll be more conversations about that element as it applies to the budget. Certainly it can start any time, but I wasn't sure if you wanted to get into that yet, so I just presented as a chart so you could have it for your information.
Question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sir.
So on the graph you gave us, the spreadsheet page,
yep.
Where you list on the 2009-2010 projected non-tax revenue and real property taxes, is that 1.5 or 1.7 million included in that 19,009 non-tax revenue?
The 19 million?
The 19 million.
The non-tax, yeah. The 1.5 fund balance is inclusive. Is inside that,
that
non-tax
in there?
The 1.5 is, yes.
The extra 200,000 is
someplace. No, the 1.5 that we put in each year, you know, typically I put that in, yes.
It is included, yep.
Okay. I guess it would be safe to ask that the board that are we going to continue the 1.5 minimum?
Yeah, I'm for it.
I'd like to see it increased.
Me too.
Well, that's why I was asking, but
well,
right
that's
now
what I thought where
early,
you were going, so I thought I'd early. Bring that back.
Yeah. We got 1.7 down now, and that's right. What this shows. We can get more.
I would consider increasing it, but I'd want to see current numbers. I'd like to see how, you know.
What percent increases would it affect this, I'm sure?
Yeah, but where is our fund balance coming from? What's generating the extra money that's carried over?
Yes, over 5 years.
Well, each year we're not spending any money that we budget.
At one point it was coming from interest of the capital project. I assume it's not coming from interest of the capital project.
That was only going into the capital project reserve. Right. That wasn't going into the undesignated reserve account.
This is just the undesignated portion of it.
For instance, last year we didn't spend just under $1 million of our expenditures. So we had 1.5 allocated, mm-hmm. and then we didn't spend all of our budget. So the combination of those two things We didn't use the 1.5 and we didn't spend the full amount. We put 2.2 back into the fund balance. So we took 1.5 out, but we took 2.2 back in, so the fund balance went up again.
Okay. So I'm just saying I'd like to see what those numbers are for as we get closer to the end of the statute.
Sure. Did you explain to the board what you told us, you know, on the when you're on the committee about the how much money we have in our fund? They're getting more insistent.
Well, that's representative in the graph here.
Yeah. 4%.
They're getting.
It used to be that state added the limits of undesignated reserve accounts was 2%. Then last year they increased that to 3%, and then 4% is now the limit that you're allowed to have in stated limit for fund balance.
Let me make sure everybody understands what they is the state is what he's referring to. The state's
so that blue line shows the limitations according to the State Education Department limitation rule, and then the pink line shows our actual undesignated fund.
Well, the point was that they're getting more insistent that we don't have so much. Before they kind of looked at it, oh, heck with it, now they're getting bad.
Well, in fact, one of the topics that the governor was talking about and the comptroller, because we had reported to the board that when you'd seen that there was some school districts that had been reported that they had been misusing their reserve accounts, and it was for uncompensated absences. And our school district is not one. We're actually underfunded in that reserve account. But the comptroller was recommending to the governor that they allow them to use that excess reserve to help alleviate budgetary excesses. And so that's kind of the same idea that we're talking about, is let's use the fund balance that we have to help alleviate the increases in the budget and the reductions in state aid. And so that's also what the governor's plan was intended to be.
The only scary thing there is that if we put more and more in, eventually that's going to run out. Then we're going to have to go to taxpayers to get that 2.5 million or whatever the total is, because it's not going to be.
Well, what's been happening though is like we put 1.5 in and we got two left over. So we put 1.5 in, but then we get more than that back next year. So I don't know if that'll keep it happening.
That's well, I think we can't plan on that happening.
No, Dr. Palmer is referring to is that if you keep putting additional fund balance into the budget, eventually the fund balance is gone, and then you have to make up that lost revenue in preceding years. And I think what we're looking at is that this is going to be a temporary issue with the reductions in state aid, that they've taken money back this year, and that's something that we haven't seen in previous years, so that won't be every year either. And then additional commercial properties that are going on the tax rolls that will bring us in additional tax revenue, not residential tax revenue, but commercial tax revenue. So you're wise to think that continue to use fund balance is a dangerous thing, but looking ahead at the future, we have some additional revenue sources coming in that would indicate we wouldn't have to do that every year.
Hang on. Frank has been waiting.
I was going to say to use fund balance, undesignated fund balance for reoccurring expenses can come back to bite you big time.
Yeah.
It's fine to use an undesignated fund balance like for the football field. I mean, you know, that you don't have to go to the taxpayers. You can. But when you start using it for reoccurring expenses, if we've been fortunate in the past few years because of, I think, our tax. Our assessments have been more than we had projected, so we've been getting more money than we. But that could end in this economy.
Yeah. The only part of it is, there, at some point, they're not going to allow us to have that in there that much.
Oh, I agree.
So, yeah. I mean, if we're going to have to use it, well, that's usually probably the best way to do it, I would think. But we'll discuss that later and how much and whatever.
Before they mandate us to do it.
And I've always advocated for not using fund balance for recurring expenses, too, for the same reason. In the last 3 years, I've spoken to that effect. But the difference this year is that I'm considering the fact that we're receiving massive cut in state aid as not a reoccurring, you know, that's like an unreoccurring expense. Because
we
count on that state aid to be there, and this is a hope.
We hope that's the case.
But it could be cut for the next 2 or 3 years. before it starts going back up.
Right.
Or flatline.
If you're going to bring, if you're going to plan on using your undesignated fund balance, you better plan it out over a 2 or 3 year period at least.
Right. Yeah.
Because this isn't going away tomorrow.
Well, that's very, very smart.
I'd also like to make another point, too. I mean, our staff has been fiscally responsible in managing that, and that's why we're having this so-called problem. It's a great problem.
Others would love that.
Yes.
That's
so
a great point.
Yes, we need to remember that this is... Thank you.
Well, and you see that restrained by seeing a budget that comes in only at 2.8%, and last year it was 2.4%, when benefits are projected at 7% increase, and salaries are typically in, you know, by the 4% range according to the negotiated contract. So when 70% of the budget goes up by 4%, 7%, but the entire budget only goes up by 2.4 or 2.8 this year, which is at the high end, then that shows that we've also trimmed back and have been fiscally responsible in trying to eliminate some of those other increases.
Karen.
So it's kind of a combination of both of those
things. Karen.
As we all know, the budgeting process is very complex, but as what Ron is sharing right now means that at the end of this budget year that we're working on, we're not going to have that fund balance building back up by our process. But when we cut out, if we're not cutting people or services, we're cutting our budget. And but this is just my opinion, but we're at a place where we're going to have to make a decision. We've acquired a fund balance either by being fortunate and getting additional revenue that we hadn't budgeted, or we didn't expend our full budget. And part of that money, I'm sure, came from our taxpayers, especially the expenditure side. And yes, we have to kind of look ahead, because this is not going to go away right away. But in one hand, we talk about the fund balance we have, and we have above what the state is telling us we are allowed to have, but yet we seem to be hesitant to apply it to this next year's budget. I think we, in my personal opinion, we have to apply more because of what taxpayers are facing right now. But yet, we won't apply at all for certain. But I think we should apply enough that we help the burden, the taxpayers, because of what they're facing at this time. But we're holding the line. We're maintaining our good educational program. And I think this is a good way to do it, just my opinion.
Okay, thank you.
And the other point, the way he's run his figures, it's $1.5 million is what the cost increases over last time. So I don't anticipate $1.5 million going against more, but that would wipe away any increase to the public. So anything below that is still going to have a significant impact. So, I mean, that's the difference between this year and last year, $1.5 million. So whatever else you put on, that's much less you pass on.
I'd almost like to know what the projection, maybe our next meeting, what the projection is at the end of this current school year.
Because leftover funds.
Undesignated. What do you anticipate that to be? That might be a helpful number.
Anticipate any.
Well, usually at this point in the time, I'm being very conservative, and I always
say, I understand
we're not
going
to have any money left over, and then we get to the end of the year, we have money left over. But one thing I can tell you that we've experienced recently is that with the economic downturn of this community, as we begin to see some of the other industries lay off people or turn to their employees to recover costs by increasing benefit premiums and different things, we're having a lot of people get on our health insurance and get all, you know, because either they've lost health insurance through their spouse's employment or their spouse's employment has raised the premium so high with the employee portion that it's beneficial for them to come to us. So usually when I budget additional monies for health insurance premiums, because in January we have open enrollment, we've seen an influx of people in January to come onto the plan. So I know it's old news, but I don't see having a lot of money left over this year, and what we would have in increased expenditures we would use to prime next year's by by purchasing items ahead of time and then being able to reduce expenditures out of the budget. So like this year we did that with the textbooks. We purchased some textbooks that we knew we needed, and then we went back and took that money out of the budget and we were able to purchase it. So I anticipate that if we get to the end of the year we have excess, we'll do the same, and then final budget numbers you'll see that reflected too, to help reduce some of that tax burden.
Good point. Any other questions?
You want to move on?
Ken?
The next section is a single sheet, which demonstrates our best knowledge of projected state aid. And the you should look for a red number, because I've told you in the last couple of meetings that as you've read the papers and we've kept you informed, there has been a reduction, a proposed reduction by the governor to all of the school districts, and the net proposed reduction effect on our district is the amount you see in red in the bottom right, which is the $257,343. So a simple translation would be we would have had that much more available to us this year than is being projected will be available to us next year. Again, one of the variables is that I guess it depends on you have to be fair on both sides of it, I guess. Is it possible that the legislature could take the governor's proposal and increase it? I suppose it's possible. The political climate in Albany, however, suggests that there's so many groups challenging the respective cuts now that if any reduction, if any changes are made, it could involve reductions in cuts, as it were. But we're presuming for this budget purpose, the last set of numbers that we have to work with, until there's official change in Albany, that's what you see with the proposed state aid increase or decrease. You can see the cost centers are self-explanatory, but the original proposal from the governor would have involved $832,157, and our basic state aid loss actually comes in at $257,343. So that number is built in here. Okay? A couple of quick sections. Back now, Richard, to one of your questions you had earlier. I've built a mini spreadsheet of sorts to talk about special education requests and some unique pieces that are also can come into play in this budget. These items are not reflected in this budget, but it's knowledge for you to have to know how they could impact the budget if we wanted it to. So I'll just very quickly cover them. Our review of our Medicaid collection system by NARIC suggests to us that we have improvements. Those improvements have been put in place through Leanne's direction, and as a result, we are now collecting on 65 current students. To date, that has amounted to additional state aid available to our district in the amount of $269,920. So we found money that we were entitled to, and by through diligence in their office, we're collecting this amount of additional state aid. The second area is their stacks.
How many years is that over? Is that just this current school year?
No, it's over. It goes back a couple of years, okay. And there is, we want to get better at it, so that we can get closer each year to being able to predict it. But we're in kind of in catch-up mode over a couple of years.
So
that's going to apply with
that number coming in.
Not total. I'm saying not total. Leanne, are you out there? Yeah. Not total this year would that amount come in, but that's what's happening as a result of the going backwards to get those appropriate aids available. And as with many aid packages with the state, it's typically a year later. You hear the good news, but you don't get the money until the following year. So I did want to point that out to you. Literally stacks, as opposed to stacks, I'll get to in a few minutes, piles of some preschool files that needed to be entered into our Starbase system just haven't been over a period of time. The CPS service at BOCES is not compatible with our IEP direct system, which contributes to the delay. They have to kind of talk twice to each other to get the data in. It just takes that much longer for people to enter the data. And what it results is, among other things, are delays in parent communications. And that obviously is not a good thing. Parents are getting letters demonstrating their need to come to to finalize a plan for a student. And in fact, the student's been in the plan, you know, for a while. That's just not good. So again, through the special education or a special services area, the district was planning to discontinue the BOCE service that we currently purchased for, and then potentially offer stipends for our current typists that we have in the district, which would be above our, you know, overtime money, if you will, to make sure that all those files are kept up to speed, because there's many of them, and they happen regularly. The result of doing that action, as an example, would save the district $5,800. In other words, the expense for the overtime would save us the $5,800, because it's the two expenses plus the $5,800, that would be the cost we would purchase from BOCES if we kept it where it is. So I'm just giving you some variables to see how we can make more of a dent, if you will, into this budget as it's been presented to you. Office staff in the department have also been trained on submitting stack reports to SED. The reports have not been current for several years. As a result, the state will not give you aid on a presumption that you have a need or you are eligible for it. They need the formal stack reports to cross-check and give you the aid. Stack reports from 07 or 08 and 08 or 09, there's your 2 years that we were talking about a little bit earlier, George, are now being submitted. As they are submitted, we would expect the impact to be the budget increase in state aid for 09-10 would be $391,385. Yep.
Does that reflect the 07-08, 08-09, that $300,000? Or is that just this year?
It's this year. You wouldn't notice, of course. I didn't bring it. But I submitted to you a copy of the governor's proposed budget at one time, and you will recall in there was a line item that said your district is getting an increase. It's because of the work that they had done.
Yeah,
they recovered $391,000 and was applied to this year's state aid package.
So it won't necessarily be that much every year.
Actually, I don't know. I know there's more to be gained. Let's put it that way.
They're not all finalized yet.
So we should. Yeah, and again, with each year getting even more efficient with the reporting for the stacks, we would continually be assured we're getting our share of the aid that would be available to our district. So that's additional effect on the budget. We would anticipate purchasing 9 slots from CVS for career options for our students.
English,
yep.
That means pulling 9 kids back?
No, we would buy, where we are now is we would anticipate buying 9 slots. The cost, it would be $108,000 if we did that. Our resolution is that we would like to provide those services in-house. There's the pullback piece of it that you're talking about, Mr. Levine. Mm-hmm. And if the current staff can deliver it, then it's a total savings of $108,000. If we can't get the total staff, the staff to deliver the total services, then we are exploring the very real possibility of hiring an aide as a coach to perform those in-house services for us. And the cost differential for the coach versus the payment to BOCES would net a result of approximately $73,000. So here's another example where if we're proactive and make a decision on adding to, in terms of staffing, we actually are saving money in the process of doing so.
Now, are these proposed changes that you have, or are these already included?
These are proposed. This is just.
So this is not included in
no,
anything we've already looked
these
at.
These are just proposals. Okay. Where we know we have stack money in, that I believe, if I'm misspeaking that, Ron, please correct me, but we put in what we know we have, but these ideas of where money could be saved are not reflected in this budget. So as I was saying earlier, we get more and more variability on that 2.8% increase. The closer
right.
we put some of these features in place,
yeah, right.
we begin to drive those costs down as well.
Right.
This aid coach, I guess I don't understand. Usually when you're talking about career options, you talk about counselors, and those are paid at a much higher rate than a teacher's aid is.
I think I can help you with that.
Yes.
The aid piece is when on a job coach, the students are placed out in work areas. They have a job coach that goes with them. That's an aide position that actually stays with that person on the job to assist to make sure that they are doing
what the employer would like them to do. So that's where the job coaches come in, and that's where additional aid may be required to stay with that person. Am I correct in speaking along those lines?
So do you need a coach for each one of those students?
No, coach for the team.
No, you may need a coach for two or three at a time.
But it's all the same career, so it's only one.
Yeah. They're going to be, with this careers, they're placed in they're trained on the job training. So part of their day is spent in the classroom. The other part of the day, they're spent on the job. So you would have a coach with them on the job to help them through the learning process of that job so that it's support for them to learn the job and for the employer knowing that, okay, I'll take the chance of bringing that person in, that somebody's going to be there to watch them so that they don't have to do it.
So we would still need someone to help procure those jobs and all that, and that's going to be done at the counselor level, not at the aide level.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah.
There could be more than needing just one aide to do it then. Is that true? That there's more to it than just having an aide to go to the job?
Well, the additional aide that has been mentioned is what I just mentioned.
Right.
And that's all they foresee unless...
Just that limited to that capacity, Leanne? That's what we're thinking of.
What counselor be needed?
Yeah, who's going to find the job? Mm-hmm. Who's going to decide what? Because they do that at BOCES, right?
You want to say some more to that?
Want to address that a little bit?
What kid should go to what job site and that kind of
yep,
stuff.
Yep, there's definitely feet on the floor to make those contacts. Yep.
At this point, we're looking at our staffing. I've met with everyone at the high school. I meet with them early next week. So we're looking at options and availability of the staff we currently have to do that.
So do you feel that staffing we have on hand is going to be sufficient for that?
I think we'll be all right.
One quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Are these 9 slots for the same type of job or different? Are they going to one site?
I don't know.
Usually they're stationed at one site.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why you only need the one.
But the site could change.
Right.
It depends on what they can get an employer to accept. If the employer will accept the full term that they're there, great. If not, then that's where you're, of course, going to need the aid, you know, when they first get started, more additionally. But generally, the aides, unless they're students that are very high need, the aides usually cover 2 to 3 at a time, unless they're assigned one-on-one.
The students get paid a wage for this?
They get paid basically a stipend. And that's usually worked out with
it's
the...
Not very much.
But none of that comes back to the district.
No, that goes to the student.
That's the work experience.
Some of the work experience paid by the employers is federal programming money, titles money, also fundraising money that might be done and raised by asking corporations for donations.
So when you did figure this as far as the coaches' aides, you figured it for 2 or 3, 4?
It depends on really what the situation
is.
It's a variable number.
It is. That's why it's presented as
Nine different students, they all have 9 different jobs in different areas, but you have 9 different aides.
You may not have them out all at the same time, though. You may have some out in the morning, some out in the afternoon, so that there's a split.
Some could, you know, getting classroom instruction while a smaller group is out with the aide and vice versa when they rotate. And it's not every day of the week that they're on the site. It depends on the site for the work and the relationship of the business owner or the establishment in terms of how many at that one site would he or she like to have. And also a part of the coordination here is to be certain that the kids have success in the experience. It's not just dropping children off and hoping that at the end of their time at the delicatessen, learning how to manage a deli, as an example, that they've had miserable experience. The aide is there. The aide purpose would be there to guide them through, you know, starting get to work on time. You know what that means. Okay, let's make sure you're there. Let's look at your progress reports. Let's get feedback from the business owner on how you're doing. What could you do differently? What could you do better? And then bringing that back into the classroom for that kind of discussion. The value, from a vocational ed perspective, if you will, I think you see the value is pretty self-evident in the sense that the more real the experiences can be for students when they enter the workforce, the better chances they are of being successful in it. The value here that I wanted to point out is that this is a cost of 108 that is going to go out to BOCES if we don't do anything different, because we're paying for 9 slots. We're trying to come up with an alternative to that cost and a better program, and it turns out in saving the district some money. Eventually, could it be that the 73 is reduced because we got the diversification of the program, so it really is only 40? I'd like to be a failure at saving 40. I guess it would be the way I would say it. It's a way, we're not really sure, but we're just estimating, as it looks right now, it's approximately $73,000 in savings. I don't. Job coach, coaching.
I have no idea.
In the buildings, in my career, I've been in districts where that experience has existed, but I guess I'm hearing from the board members.
I don't know, Frank, if you can remember if that's ever been done here.
No, not through our district.
I got a question. On this, the personnel not currently included in the budget says 39,000 plus benefits. You add benefits, there isn't much difference.
What page? You're on the last page?
Okay, I've got. Plus to 119. Well, you figure the cost of benefits. There's not much of a difference at all.
Well, I'm not. That could be concluded. I'm not trying to draw a conclusion from. I'm just showing you the dollars associated. Maybe I should go to the next page real quick and cover this up.
Before you do, George, you had a question.
I think I'm talking the same thing. You know, we're talking. We're making a partial budget or whatever on this. I'm just encouraged. Right. You know, it's not only the cost of the aid, but it's the cost of the supervisors for this position. Are we going to be busing students? Is it going to be increased transportation? Do we bus students to the job site? The health insurance, the benefits of the aid, that kind of stuff, all need to be in there, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe put it off till you flesh it out. Because, I mean, if it's more or less a wash, I don't mind, but it could be more. Looking at it, I don't know for sure. Not that would mean that wouldn't support it, but
I make the assumption though that when you estimated the $72,000 saving, that you took all those factors into account, meaning fringe benefits on the salary of the teacher.
Well, we based on what we would budget for salaries for those positions and costed
and
it that way.
The transportation piece would be an allowable, aidable piece.
Would also be aidable.
It probably won't be a lot of expenditure tied to the transportation piece of it.
It shouldn't be, I don't put Shane in the spot in terms of if we had a program like this. The question would be, it seems to be, my observation would be that there wouldn't seem to be a tremendous increase to have a bus run accomplish this portion of a program, getting kids to the job site with the aid.
No, and depending on the times, it would be combined with something else that we're already doing.
Yeah, so, if we can get closer to really, getting finite to numbers of students, right. In this scenario, this is what the savings would be. I just wanted to be sure that you saw some creative thinking going on to try to save some money.
And I'm not trying to squash.
No, I understand.
Anytime we
understand.
Can do kids for us, do things for students internally, I think that's great.
What kind of aid do we get back, though, if we go with the posters? Isn't that aidable?
Yes, it's all aidable.
But is it aidable when we do it?
Yes, it's aidable when we do it.
Yeah, but it's not. We get more than they get, don't we?
Leanne?
Those children weren't aidable, the ones I decided when I looked at the budget. To be aidable, to be stackable, you have to be over a certain amount of money. And these programs are half-day programs I purchased, so none of these are aidable. I
none
pay
of
money
them are
to
aidable.
BOCES, and I get them back because they're not high cost.
Okay.
And the other thing to offer is the ones who are going to be seniors, et cetera, who are out of the workforce, I've left in that program. I looked at pulling back 9th and 10th graders, kids who were going there next year, because we would start more in-house and work our way as they became juniors and seniors to more of the outside.
So then that's really not an aidable cost to this district then, because it's too low money dollar value.
Yes, and that's why I looked at bringing it in-house.
Through BOCES, it's not aidable, but this creates an option.
Okay.
would it be aidable if we brought it to us?
Then I have to, if I can figure out the cost, right, if it hits our magic number. And that's why I looked at the ones that weren't aidable at BOCES is how I did my homework.
And you can stack this with other programs.
Right.
So that you can increase the cost and maybe get aidable.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because BOCES doesn't get the aid.
No, we do.
Two more categories. We have two students who are returning from CVS back to the district. The impact would be savings to the district in terms of our not paying for that service through BOCES. Students are successful in their school programs, and therefore the result of that movement. And it could be three another year, four when it's all done, one when it's all done. I'm just giving you parameters with this whole page to say that for two students to come back, the reduction of costs to BOCES for that would be $70,000. We know we have two coming back. Can't affirm at this point whether it will only be two or two come back and one leaves and becomes part of BOCES, but it gives you a ballpark idea of $70,000 in savings for two students. The last category is the district currently purchases services from CVS, which we have not had the space or programming options available to do ourselves. We continually want to look for ways to do and programs on campus, and we're going to continue to explore that. So the cost for the purchase services through CVS amounts to $147,000. If we can figure out appropriate space and write the appropriate programming for in-house, then of course, if we can find that space, that would require a teacher because we'd be taking back services for which we need to have an instructor. However, putting the instructor in place in-house versus paying for the service through BOCES is estimated to be for 09 or 10, somewhere in the neighborhood of $76,000-$77,000. So another idea of possibility that could factor into more deliberation on the overall budget. Work this in, leave that one out, that kind of dialogue. And that's why we wanted to present it to you. Back on the listing, you'll see we've listed the personnel not currently included in the budget if all of those above were enacted, meaning we don't have them in here. So we haven't accounted for the special ed teacher, we didn't account for the special education aide, and we didn't account for the 0.4 school psychologist. And I've given a rough estimation of their salary and the benefits. I didn't put an estimate in, but it would be the benefits attached to it. Estimated cost of the district if these possibilities are not enacted. In other words, status quo, what we already know, our commitment to BOCES would involve CPS services, $11,800. And nine slots from CVS, which is another $108,000 for $119,000 payment out, if you will, to BOCES. And then I listed some of those other variables that I've talked about just in a tabular fashion. What are some estimated savings to the district through other initiatives like more refined stack reporting, being on top of getting those forms in, any students that return, any of our in-house programs that we can put in place. I kind of tried to break them out and give you kind of a numeric to work with. So stack reporting could result to, as we currently know it, to be $391,000 in state aid. That number may never be that large again, but then again, it could always be a number coming in that we otherwise would have lost and over a year or two earlier did lose. This is taking care of that problem. Medicaid aid, we already predicted $269,000, and CPS filing, again, the clerical, the piece that I pointed out, was another $5,800. So that section was to do two things. One was to give you an example of how variable the first page that I presented to you, meaning the budget-to-budget increase, is 2.8, but it's still in flux because these are some of the options that could drive it down internally without any changes in state aid, without any changes in cuts to the state from the state education department or from the governor. The second part was to, as I said, give you an idea of some of the ways in which the special education department is working to get services for our kids closer to home when we can, and in the process actually save money whenever we can find spots to do so. So that's that section. Okay. And the last section has several pages to it, but I want to point out again that we certainly have had conversation from time to time about some larger budget items that are not in this budget. They're not included in here, and I pointed them out to you in some estimated costs. One would be the projected estimated costs for the replacement of the field, which would include site work, field work, and irrigation. You'll see a bottom line on that document. This money is not here, and that's just to let you know it's not in here. The second document that I'll draw attention to, it's about three pages in. The first three pages support the first the field renovations. The second one points, the second two pages speak to Project Adventure and the climbing wall. And the climbing wall initiative has, we received a proposal from Project Adventure as to what it would require or what they would propose would be required financially and equipment wise to in fact put up the climbing wall and institute it into a functional part of the curriculum. We would have to write a curriculum for it, we know that, and we would have to be prudent about when we, if it's approved, when we would offer this portion of the physical education curriculum, because it does impact space and it would therefore require some pretty careful planning on the part of the middle school and high school, actually all the elementary principals, middle and high school principal, to make sure that the climbing wall, use of the climbing wall doesn't in itself appreciably impact scheduling of all the other physical education classes that we have. We think we can do it. Just first blush of it is the scheduling piece of it, we believe it has some possibilities we could work out, but it would probably involve, probably more than you care to know at this point, but it would probably involve limiting the use of the climbing wall through the school to select times of the year. Those would be the warm weather climates, so that the students who would otherwise be in gym class could be outside doing their activities, and that would be the logical time to use the wall to perform that piece of the curriculum. So I'm kind of way down the road on how we would implement it, but I wanted you to see the hard numbers of the various projections that come along with the climbing wall, and again point out that neither these projections nor the field projections are in your present budget document. And that's eventually for the board to decide how to proceed with either or both of those large projects, as well as the overall budget. And that concludes my first presentation. Questions, comments?
Right there.
On the first round.
I have a question about the climbing wall, because I'm confused.
I thought
we had a climbing wall we took down.
We have a wall. We have a wall that was up and then taken down for during the renovation period. We've inspected the equipment. Some of the Ed, where are you? Maybe you could speak to it, because you and others did the on-site inspection of the equipment.
Don, myself, and Jay Majer went up. One was inspected. Some of the stuff had been taken down. The 2x4s are questionable at best because they were used as supports. They were lagged to the wall. The plywood probably would be able to reuse it again. However, there's only 11 pieces of 4x8 plywood done, if I'm correct. Yeah, some other odds and ends. The hardware is still there. Again, the only thing that was in question would be a 2x4s probably.
So we'd need this
in order
to make a,
to make the climbing wall a climbing wall. Yeah, literally a climbing wall. The my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Ed, but my understanding of the wall is it literally is the plywood construction of the surface area from which the apparatus from I-beams, etc., would then be used to come to that wall to perform various activities associated with it. Climbing, as you see, toehold climbings, etc., those things would be added to the wall. But the basic construction is you couldn't, my understanding is you couldn't do that or wouldn't want to do that with a regular interior wall of a gymnasium. You'd need a surface that you prepared for that activity.
Okay.
So the related pieces of equipment come with making it a fully functional climbing wall. That's my understanding of it, Karen.
Is the wall going to be outside or in the gymnasium?
In the middle school gymnasium, I think it's 90 feet long by 24 feet high, if I remember correctly. I don't have the paperwork in front of me. That's the length of the gym and actually the height of the
IV. Does it interfere with the use of the gymnasium at all?
No, because we put the new electric baskets in last year, and the baskets swing at a 45.
The physical equipment wouldn't be interfered with. I just wanted the board to understand that we would have to do some managing of the scheduling so that we're not subdividing terribly classes in that gym space to make whatever activity they would otherwise be doing prohibitive, because half of it is used for the climbing wall and half of it is used for some activity that needs a full space.
So the climbing wall would be used for the gym teachers and not as a club. In other words, they're going to have a curriculum, and everybody would be participating.
We need a curriculum. We need a curriculum to go with it. And as I was saying, with the curriculum would come some strong suggestions on the time of the year to use the curriculum because of these other issues that I've just talked about.
So it wouldn't be limited to 15 or 20 students in a club.
No, that's not if it became a curricular topic. It would become infused in the physical education curriculum courses for students. Along with that would be required training, which has been built into these costs. I think you probably saw that amount. But there's some training costs to be certain that the instructors of the class teaching that unit, in fact, have appropriate training to be able to teach it safely and comfortably. So that's been also built into the cost.
Would our insurance company charge a surcharge for this or anything? Is this just part of normal running a school without having any extra
liability
exposure?
My understanding is that, at least when we initially looked into this, that the climbing wall would be covered under our typical liability insurance. Providing that it's installed correctly and with certified, or inspected with a certified installer. In which case, the liability insurance then can be risk can be transferred by having that certification or installer.
Any other questions or comments? You have a chance to digest this a bit as per our schedule.
If as you proceed or think through what I presented this evening, if you have additional questions about the documents themselves, certainly let me know, email or whatever. If either individually or collectively you're beginning to want to frame some thinking on your part, I'll be glad to collect all of that and continually talk about what direction we're going, etc. How are we heading with fund balance, yes or no? Is there an amount you want to apply? What would it do if we applied different amounts? You know, those are easy things to do with the computer. We just simply plug in numbers and can show you those kinds of things.
Has the operations committee given a thought on how they want to approach the field?
Yes.
Yeah, we've done.
We thought it would
I guess using a lot. Our reserve funds. Or?
A lot dependent on how the budget was going to come in. But yes, I think the general consensus was to bring it to the full board to put it out as a separate proposition.
To
using
go on
reserve
remote?
Fund.
Or
using
as a reserve fund.
Using reserve fund so that it was known. Well, I mean, it's taxpayer money.
It's taxpayer's money, but that's what reserve fund could be used for.
Right. It's not a reoccurring cost.
Right.
It's a one-time.
And it's certainly something that's needed.
Well, you have to decide what you want to do with your football field.
Karen.
I know I'm only one board member, but I have to express my personal opinion. The economic times that our community, along with a lot of the rest of the United States, is facing, I feel at this time, as a board member, it's hard for me to support these extra items that, and especially to talk about it coming out of our reserve fund. A statement was made tonight that we shouldn't support reoccurring costs with our fund balance. I'm finding it hard to support. To me, we're here to educate our students in the best to our ability. And my own personal opinion is I'm not in favor of this at this time. If we were in a different economic climate, you would have my full support. But not doing these things. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess then we will move on to Superintendent's report.
I have none, I just did it.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, as a matter of fact, I've got some pages here.
Well, usually you have a...
Here it is. This is the bad weather report.
Oh, never mind, put it away.
As it affects Regents, the principals have received from the BOCES the plans for if the January Regents are discontinued through bad weather. None of us wants to believe that we have to worry about this, but I just want you to know there are provisions for dealing with missed Regents. And the bottom line, as I understand it to be, is if you miss it, it's gone. I mean, if a snow day is called and it affects the Regents and you can't take the Regents, there's not a makeup for that Regents. You just don't take them.
In the past, though, have students been responsible if there was a snow day during Regents Week to get to the school to take the... In other words, could they test still be given
no.
if there was a snow day?
No. It's illegal.
Because you have to transport.
It's illegal for us, right? Because if somebody wasn't able to get their writing, we denied them access to an exam. But it's illegal for us to close and then offer the exam. It's illegal for us not to close because it's Regents Week if it would have been a day that you would have typically have closed.
So you might have to close.
You might have to close, and the challenging piece of that is it just is bad timing because we took part one of the English Regents today and part two is tomorrow. So if we close tomorrow...
You can't take part two.
One, wasted your time today.
But we're all optimistic looking at Weather Scan and Weather Dan and whoever other weather person there is. It doesn't appear like we will be, right, where Shane? Shane, does not appear, you're talking to the weather gods, it does not appear that the weather concerns of accumulated snow would not hit us in any great amount until late afternoon tomorrow?
That's what the forecast of that is.
So our plan, for anybody who's got children and they're wondering, our plan is we get you here, we're keeping you here. Till
now,
last.
Is it a Regents in the AM or the PM?
Both.
They're both AM and PM.
We'll go.
Yeah. That's my report.
Ron?
I thought I gave my report too.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Great. Then I'll move on to item 5 minutes. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education held on 1/13.
Motion.
Motion, Richard.
Second.
Thank you, Guy. Questions, comments on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the Operations Committee held on January 13th, 2009.
That's
all. Thank you, Leonard.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Comments? Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under new business, CSC recommendations. Resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education approve the CSC recommendations dated
1/27/09.
Okay.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Steve. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Personnel. Under resignations, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education accept the following resignations on the date indicated of the following.
Awesome.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Karen. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Under two, appointments, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Block
the list. Thank you, Richard.
Second.
Thank you, Guy. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under B, and I do have a name for you, resolved that the Superintendent of Schools recommends to the Board of Education the following winter athletic position for the 2008-2009 school year as indicated, and the name is Janie Loja.
Motion.
Thank you, Guy. Thank you, Richard.
Does there need to be an effective date for this?
Of starting? Good question.
Indicates period effective date. I didn't know.
Do we have one?
It's.
Do we have an effective date for that appointment?
It's a good answer.
Tonight.
That's fine.
I actually modified B started last night. This is the first time in 3 years since I've been here we've been able to put two teams out there. We've only recently only had one, so it's kind of nice to see that we have like enough girls interested in playing.
Effective tonight.
Yeah,
27th.
Doesn't matter because it's salary anyway.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to appoint the following civil service provisional appointment as indicated pending exam results.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Leonard. And I would like to introduce to board members that may not. Mr. Noonan, could you please stand for a minute? This is the gentleman that you are voting on this evening.
Pleased to meet you all. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming this evening, and good luck.
It
would be nice to do that first, yes. Okay.
Yeah, let's congratulate him after.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstain? No.
Congratulations.
Now congratulations. Yeah,
congratulations.
Well, formality. You've got to be here for 25 years to get that eagle, by the way.
Okay, that's
sitting
critical.
No, there's time, she's there.
Unpaid leave. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education approve an unpaid leave of absence for Kendi Rankin as an English 712 teacher after the maternity leave, which will begin on or about 2/12/09 until consistent with Federal Family and Medical Leave Act 1993, Board of Education Policy 9520.2, and Article 9 Child Rearing Leave in the agreement between the Beaton Town Teachers Association and the Beaton Town Central School District. Karen? Steve? Thank you. Questions? No, I'm not going to read it again. Sorry about the few inflections, but all in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Policy. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the following policies, the two located below.
And I'll second it. Maybe we should have approved this before we approved the leave.
Good point. The changes aren't. Who did I get my?
I think
it was Richard and Frank.
Okay. All in favor?
I guess.
Oh, you have questions?
What page are we on?
Yes, it's page 3.
No.
Oh, the conduct.
Yeah.
Pages.
Under 6, prohibited student conduct. It's got tardiness. Do we need to put in there that senior privileges excuses it? So that if some seniors have privileges that they can be late and it's not tardy.
Then it wouldn't be tardy.
Yeah, it wouldn't be tardy.
Yeah, but my point is, though, sometimes it's on the report cards that they're tardy.
Yeah.
They fix that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We resolved that, so it now shows and demonstrates on the attendance roster that it's appropriate to see the COVID rather than the time.
Okay.
So
that's okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. We did.
Moving right along.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I got one.
Oh, sure.
Got more.
On the suspension for transportation. Are we actually using the slips and for people not being on the bus? Are we actually keeping kids in the bus and giving out the slip saying you can't ride the bus? Are we actually using the card system where the kids are told they can't ride the bus and they have to fill it out, whatever?
Yes.
Okay. My question is, does everybody want to fill out that form to do it? You have to fill out this form to do it, or you just hand out the slip?
Well, that's after several.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's not a major problem for someone to do it then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe just a guess, but possible that one day you get the name, the next day you get the time, the next day you get, and eventually the form is filled out.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
If it leads up to that kind of a deal.
If the form was so intense that people just weren't going to fill it out because it was such a pain.
Yeah, I understand.
So, it might be this. Under student searches and interrogations.
What page?
We discussed earlier about searching kids' vehicles on property, and they said we couldn't. Could it be required of a student who gets privileges to sign a sheet saying if you park on our property that you give consent to a search or you don't park here?
They signed something, right?
We actually searched the cars for the first time ever this year with the dogs.
So they let you?
The dog just walked around the car, and if the dog bit on the car, we got the keys from the student and opened the car.
What can we force?
The car is an extension of like the backpack for a student.
Okay, so we can.
And once we have a dog that's, you know.
Once he alerts.
An independent element makes that determination.
Okay.
Then we have the right to search.
Because I thought the last time we talked about it, we said we couldn't do it. They said we couldn't do it.
You can't do it if you say it's an extension of the backpack, if you find, say, drugs on a child, you cannot search a car. If you find drugs on a child, you can't search their car.
Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is that we have a right to search a student's backpack if we have a reason to believe that there could be
like a weapon or
drugs or something in that. And in the same likeness, if we have information that there may be something harmful in a car, we can search the car. We extended, when we used the drug dogs the other day, we extended the search from the building to the student parking lot for the first time ever, understanding that interpretation of the law, which was something that Mr. Amo and I had kicked back and forth for a month or so, and with our SRO had a discussion about where our legal responsibility began and ended.
So basically, the dog gives you the
car
access.
Car is, in a sense, like an extension, like a backpack.
Good.
That is searchable. But you still have to have a reason to do that. You just get random cops to just go do that. Okay. Right.
If you had like a tip that there was a weapon, possibly a weapon concealed in the car, or if you visibly saw a rifle hanging up on it, that's...
Absolutely.
That's definitely reasonable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would fall under the statute of reasonable
suspicion. Probably over 90% of all the searches that we have come from information from the students reporting to us that someone's got this or this or this on them today.
And one of the extension and related piece is we're required when we make contact with the state police for the service of the search dogs, as it were. They require that we put in writing before they will conduct the search that we'll take action on the results of the search. So it's they come with the full knowledge that they'll have the school's cooperation in following up on an arrest. Exactly.
I would go as far as to say that if we were to identify some illegal property in a student's backpack that engages us procedurally into searching lockers and searching cars now. Because now you've given us a reason to believe that there's probably something else.
Yeah.
Where before we didn't do that, we do that now.
Okay. Didn't put that one away. Okay.
Did you put into the packet that piece that came out?
Mm-hmm. Now I got to find it. Do you want to look for it now?
Yeah.
Where did we put
the list? I just
want
to make sure
list?
Board members.
Yes.
We did send another piece that we just got in on
I'm looking, you know, when we ended that, the extension of arrest if possible.
Yeah.
Just got to find the page.
Well, the defendant's in there.
Yeah, yeah. I just want
to make sure all board, if any board members had any questions to that piece, before I move out of policy.
Under 14,
yeah. Number 14, yeah.
Number 14, because we just it's about, got an update from that, from school boards.
We talked about last night.
Yeah.
So the fourth or fifth page end under A, penalties.
Yeah, came back from school boards, okay.
There's a...
Well, they actually sent us an update at the time we were going to send in. So,
okay.
Yeah. Just wanted...
So what does school board say about it?
They actually, before we had a chance to send ours in, they sent us a new piece with revisions, and that's what it is. That's the latest legal...
So they suggested that the superintendent needed to be involved. They concurred that?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I follow your question, because I don't want to be misleading. The recommendation under penalties... Let me see, I'll do this from memory. There was questions, several board members had questions as to whether or not students knew that one of the penalties that could be imposed could be an arrest. And since we did not have it in our code of conduct policy, we wanted to make that change. And so we inserted it as number 14. In addition, while that was occurring, we received other updates to the same code of conduct policy that you see, which are also in bold in a couple of other locations. And they have to do with the period of time in which a student can appeal a suspension that has been extended, and in two spots. One was to 15 days, I think, and the other one moved from 15 days to 30 days. So you have two things were kind of happening simultaneously, but we brought them both into the one document because it was one reading tonight.
Okay. Yeah.
So basically that if there's going to be a recommendation of arrest, you already know about it. You will know before it happens.
As a parent or as a student, yes. Yes, that's the alert piece, if you will, when the students and parents will know this as part of the code of conduct at the beginning of each year. That clause will now appear in the handbook in addition to our policy book.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstained? Noes? Motion carries. These are revisions, so this is the only reading. Let's move forward. Under financial, resolve that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education approve the payment for health services fees to the Plattsburgh City School District for the 08-09 school year in the amount of $15,194.34 for 31 students at $490.14 per
motion.
Pupil.
I'll second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Frank.
Does this need to be a roll call for this month?
No, this is budgeted each year. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Resolve that the board does hereby authorize the following bands for buses for the lowest interest rate possible and on the maturity date indicated. That's a second of five payments for $68,868.35. Leonard? And Richard, thank you. Roll call on this.
Richard Levine?
Yes.
George Palmer?
Yes.
Guy Falcon?
Yes.
Frank Hay?
Yes.
Leonard King?
Yes.
Karen Armstrong?
Yes.
Steve Chumbly?
Yes.
Stan Kurowski?
Yes. Motion approved. And then I will move to additional items to discuss, and I do have one quick thing I would like to make a comment on, and I'd like to thank our staff for that. For the work they did bringing our students out to crickets back first part of January. I did forget to include that. I am sorry. You guys did an excellent job with putting that together and bringing it forward. So I'd like to also extend the board's thank you on that too. And I apologize for it coming so late. But, very nicely done. And could you pass that along to Kate? Okay. Any other additional comments? I'll then open the floor for any public comment very quickly. See none, closing it. Then I'll have to move to executive session, but I need to get a clerk pro tem.
stand.
No second.
Don't hurry.
Who was it?
Steve.
Steve is...
To stand.
Point for him.
Stands the pro temp, and it's moved by Steve, and by who?
Me.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstained? No. Then we will be...
I'll make a motion to go into executive session.
Hang on. Second?
I'll second.
Okay, we are going to be moving into executive. I am striking the discussion for the Beacon Town Teachers Association contract because information isn't quite ready, but we will be going in for a particular person's employment history.
Frank did.
Yes.
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstained? No. Motion carries. Getting it on there.
So that I forget.